So why don't we get started? Oh, I forgot to start my timer this morning. So let me do that. How many people were at my session this morning? Okay, so just to be clear, this is a duplicate of that session. The difference will be that this afternoon we're going to talk about how to do globalization, localization, and translation, in fact, around HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, and all that stuff. So if you're looking for something different, this is not a different session. It's not a repeat. This is a different session with the same content. Does that make sense? Probably not. Okay. Let me introduce myself. My name's Ben Riga. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I'm in a group called Developer and Platform Evangelism, and I focus exclusively on Windows 8. Spent a lot of time on Windows Phone, but lately a lot of us have been thinking about Windows 8. We think it's going to catch on, so we're all jumping on the bandwagon. No laughs. Okay, this morning I got no questions and no laughs, so I'm hoping this group is going to be more interactive, right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. My contact info, rather than just put an email, I have an About Me page. So if you go to that page, you can contact me by email or any one of the million different social networks that I'm on. So feel free to do that, and that'll get you to all of that. We're going to talk about a bunch of things today. We'll talk about localization, we'll talk about language resolution, globalization, and then translation. And related to that, I have a bunch of helpers today. As you can imagine, Microsoft's a large organization, and there's a lot of different teams working on stuff like world-ready apps. And so I have a bunch of different people from the product team. So if there are questions that I can't answer, I'm sure one of them can. And I guarantee you one of them can. So let's just jump in. The first thing I should mention, and maybe you already know this, but Windows 8 is giving you as a developer unprecedented reach and this huge, huge opportunity. The store itself will be in 230 or more different countries. The apps can actually be deployed in over 100 languages, and developers from 120 different markets can deploy into that marketplace. This is unprecedented, as I've already said, and is really your biggest opportunity. In fact, the one thing that you can do for your app to give you more growth and more downloads and hopefully more revenue is to localize your app. Over 75% of the users on the internet are not English speaking, or not primarily English speaking. And so by addressing that, you're opening up your addressable users by a substantial amount. So you're at the right session if you're looking for growth. So let's talk about what that means. Here we go. So what does world readiness mean? It means a couple different things to the end user versus the developer. To the end user, they're looking for apps that give them content in their language. The data is formatted for their culture, so things like dates and times and currencies and numbers look like it would look like in their culture, in their country. And then finally, text input just works, no matter what they're trying to do. And that's great from the end user perspective. That's always been a little difficult to deliver on from the developer. So what you're looking for from a developer perspective is to be able to give the end user all of that from a single code base that's identical across all of the various languages and cultures. That saves you a lot of time, saves you a lot of, allows you to reuse code, less bugs, and all of that good stuff. You also want to separate your code from your user input text and all of the stuff related to UI so that it makes it easier to translate, and so you can scale out your translations efforts much faster and get to more languages much faster. And then, as the end user would expect, you want to be able to support all of the different linguistic and cultural needs of your end users. And so how do you do that? It's always been a little difficult. And actually, in Windows 8, there's a bunch of stuff that's been added that makes it much easier. A lot of the work and heavy lifting is actually done by a combination of Windows 8 and some of the tooling that you get from Visual Studio. The first thing that's quite substantially different is that as an end user, rather than defining what your one language is that you want Windows to run in and your apps to run in, you're now providing a list of preferred languages in order of preference. And that's quite a big change. And then Windows will actually use that list of languages to do the right thing. And we'll talk about what that means in detail later on, how we figure out what the language is and what language the end user actually ends up seeing. There's also a resource management system, and specifically for HTML and JavaScript, you no longer need to call to a server to get the right string. All of that stuff is actually in your app, and you're using the exact same resource management system that C# users and Visual Basic users and C++ users. There's some really interesting and cool tooling that allows you to be more productive in that area. And then also, in many cases, you will actually have different files, different types of files, whether it's images or media or any kind of files that you'll have to manage for different languages. And Windows 8 and Visual Studio make that much easier for you. And I'll show you what that means. And then finally, there's new tooling that helps you address the issue of translations. How do you do translations without giving the translator a copy of Visual Studio and a copy of, God forbid, your source code, right? That makes no sense. So we'll talk about some of the stuff that does that. So let's jump in. There are three parts to building world-ready apps: localization, globalization, translation. And then as part of translation, we'll also talk about how we can help you in the testing. And so we'll jump in. The first thing when you're localizing an app, there are two things that you need to do. The first thing is you need to set your default language. And that's in your app manifest for when you're building a Windows Store app. You set a default language. Typically, it's English. It doesn't have to be. But typically, it's English because that's the probably the language that is most used outside of whatever the person's normal native tongue is. Once you've set the default language, then you have to set aside some folders for resources, whether that's your resource strings or your images and so on. And so in this case, I have a resource folder. Where is it? A resource folder, which has different folders below it. You'll see DE-DE, which would be German, EN-US, which is my English translation, ES-ES, which is Spanish, and so on and so forth. And within that, you have resources.resw. That's the C#. You have the exact equivalent, you'll see in a few minutes, which is the res.json for HTML and JavaScript. There are a number of things that you need to worry about when you're localizing. The first one is file-based. So if you have files that you need to localize, for instance, images, sound files, HTML, CSS, whatever it is, including the actual HTML itself, as I said. File-based resource management, images, for instance, are expensive to translate. And by expensive, I mean they cost money. Not only do you need a translator to translate the text, but then you need to go and hire some sort of designer or something to actually make those changes and create the images. So I would recommend that you avoid it if possible. But of course, in many cases, many scenarios, you have no choice but to build that into your system. So the way you do that is by creating alternate file assets for different languages and different DPI. As you know, hopefully you know, in Windows, we support three different scalings, 100, 140, 180. And you can have different files. And Windows will actually allow you to put those files in and then pick the right file based on whatever resolution the end user is using, and in our case, whatever language they're currently asked for. And it uses a very simple file folder naming convention. I'll show you how that works. Actually, let's look at that right now. So the naming convention is pretty straightforward. You have a folder name, and then qualifier names and values, qualifier name and value, and so on. And so the example I have here is there's an image folder. Within that, there's an en-us folder. Within that, you have a home region. And then the file itself is called logo.scale-100. Contrast and so on .png. When you are using that from within your app, all you say is I need images/logo, and then Visual Studio, based on the way it handles that, it puts all of these resources into something called a PRI file, and it finds the right, magically, it will find the right file. So you may have a logo.scale-140, logo.scale-180, and it will just find the right file based on whatever the end user is doing. And again, if you have different languages, it will find the right logo for whatever language the end user is using. So I'll show you how that is. I have a very simple example how that works in a couple seconds. The other thing you need to do is actually localize a string. And so here, this is useful for when you have hard-coded strings in code. And so you're using strings for whatever reason dynamically. And so what you would do is move those strings out of your code to a resource file. In HTML land, you would use a res.json file. I'll show you how that works in a couple seconds. And then you just use the resource loader.getString to retrieve that resource by name. You'd give the resource a name, give the resource loader or the get string function the name. It will find that string for you. It's pretty straightforward. Finally, you may have strings in markup. And essentially what you would do is move those strings from markup to a resource file. Again, the same res.json file. And in HTML, you make sure that you have the process all function. And then if you mark your resource references using a data win.res, the process all will find the right resource and do that as part of your HTML. It's all kind of magic, and I'll show you how that works in a couple seconds. How am I doing so far? Is this interesting? Am I going too fast or too slow? Okay. And then the final thing that's important is outside of your app. Your app is part of Windows 8, and the way that is surfaced is using the start screen and the Windows Store and all of that good stuff, search, splash screen, all of that stuff is surfaced in your app manifest. So you need to actually be able to localize your app manifest. And again, you would add those strings into your resource file and reference those strings using the ms-resource URI scheme. And again, I'll show you how that all works. So rather than keep talking about this, how would you like if I demo it? The answer is yes. Anyone not want me to demo? Okay. Any questions so far? I had the same problem this morning until finally one brave person asked that one question, and then all of a sudden there was a flood of hands. Who's going to be the first one to ask a question? Really? Okay. Okay. So here's my app. Before we actually get into the app, let me show you the languages that I have on my system. And so here you can see that I have listed English and then French-Canadian and then English QPS.PLOC. I'll talk about that later. That's for pseudo-localization. And then I have German and Spanish and so on. So this is the languages that I've told Windows are my preferred languages. And so I speak English primarily. I come from French Canada, and so I also speak French. My parents are Italian, so I speak Italian. So I would have that list of languages right in my system. And Windows 8 takes advantage of that. So right now I have it as English. So when I run my app, it's going to run in English. So let's run the app and see what it does, and then I'll show you how it's localized. So typical Windows 8 app, there's lots of content on the screen. We're not going to worry about localizing content for now. And there's no Chrome. There is actually a little bit of Chrome, which is the app title. So we'll need to localize the app title. But other than that, we don't see any other things. The other thing you might want to localize is, there it is, the app bar. And so the app bar has a bunch of buttons. And so I want to make sure that the edit, remove, add, I need to be able to localize that. So we'll see how that works. And then this app also has a bunch of other things. So there's a settings page. And the settings page itself is a system function. But the language listing there is something that I added from within my app as part of a contract. And so I need to be able to localize the word language so that when it's in French, it's Lang, and when it's in Deutsch, in German, it's Sprach, and so on. So we need to do that. And then the actual page itself, you can see, actually has a title, which also needs to be localized. And then it has an image. And the image, as you can imagine, is in English. And so I'll need to have a different image in each one of those. So let's actually have a look at the app and how we do that. And so the app, let me stop running here. So let me go to items.html. So here is the HTML file. And the first thing we'll do is localize the page title. And as you can see, the actual tag itself has the text paymeplease-js. And you didn't see that when I ran the app. It just said paymeplease because that is just placeholder text, so that I can use that while it's not localized. And the way I did localize it is by putting that data-win-res and then told it the text content. I want to localize text content, and I want that text content to come from the value that I have in my res.json file for a name called app title. And so if I look at my resources, I have a folder called resources, and within my folder resources, I have en-us. So again, I was in the English language, and so I have actually added a file called resources.resjson, and you can see here that I have a couple of things that are related to app title. I have the name value pair app title, and then the name of my app, which is pay me please. And then I also have underscore app title.comment, which is not in the app itself, but is useful if you're sending this out to get translated as a comment to the translator. Things like, you know, don't translate this string, or don't translate the word Ben because it's a proper noun, and that sort of thing. So you want to make sure that translator has as much context as possible. And so what happens here is actually we need to look at the items.js file. And the items.js file I have in my ready function. So when the app loads, when this page loads, I am running the process all. And the process all will actually go through my HTML, find those data-win.res, and then go and do the replacement for me. Does this make sense? You guys getting this? There is some special functions here. So if I come back to items.html, I also had the app bar. And so it works pretty much the same way. As you can see, my edit control is up there. And I have my data-win control for app bar command. And then I am localizing the label, but also localizing the tooltip. And so those are both, you know, AB edit label and AB edit tooltip, as you can imagine, are actually names in my res.json file. And let's see, where is it? Here it is, right? So can you guys see this in the back? Do I need to pump up the font? Yes? Is it visible? Just give me a thumbs up. OK, good. So AB edit labels edit and so on. So what happens when I want to change that is I have, let me go to the French language, and I look at the exact same file with the exact same names, but obviously the value would be the localized text. And so app title would be payez-moi s'il vous plaît, and edit would be modifier, and modifier tooltip. If you say tooltip with a French accent, it works really well. So if I run this and pump move French Canada as my language, now when it runs in French. And if I bring up my app bar, you can see that my app bar is localized. How am I doing? Okay, let's keep going. So there's some other things that we wanted to look at. So if you remember, we also had that settings page. And so how do we get that settings page created? Well, it's in my default.js for my app. I am creating a settings page. This is an app-wide thing. And so I'm creating the settings page here, right? But the settings page has this function, which gives it the title of that settings page. And so that title needs to be localized. And so I can't do that in markup. I'm doing it in code. And so I need to find that resource. And so here you can see that I'm loading up, I'm newing up the resource loader here. And you can see I'm putting the text for lang settings. I could have done it directly, but in this case, I'm putting the text for that lang settings. This is one of the values. Putting that in lang settings title. And then using lang settings title when I'm adding that command to the settings page. Right, and so now if I go back to my res.json file, you can see lang settings here is the word language, and in French it would be langue. Make sense? Yes, question. First question. I should have a t-shirt to throw you. I wish I did.
I'm just going to make you happy.
Oh, thank you. So the question was, let me just repeat it for the recording and so on. The question was, well, this is great, but I'm paraphrasing, your resources are all local, and I'd like to keep my resources in the cloud and update my languages on the fly. That you could theoretically do that, but you have to make the assumption that the app may be offline, and so you could do it, pull it down, and then use data binding and some crazy stuff to do that. My recommendation is to do it this way for a couple of reasons. One is when you, it's easier to manage, but it's also easier to get to your customers. So when you submit the app to the marketplace, you tell it which regions and which languages, and you also localize it in the marketplace for those languages. You wouldn't have that opportunity if your app was just in English in the marketplace and then you change the languages on the fly. Does that make sense? Yes. See, I told you, once one person asks a question, then there's this flood. Okay, go ahead. Did you have a question? So the question was, is the language that's chosen based on the language of Windows, or is it based on the language of the end user? And it's definitely on the language of the end user. So in this case, for instance, I'm running an English version. I'm not even sure if I can say that. I'm running Windows, and I've told Windows that I have installed the English. It comes with the English language pack. I can install additional language packs. But none of that really matters. What really is important is the language that the end user has said are the preferred languages that they want, right? So if I come back here, this is right in the control panel. They would say, in this case, I've said French Canadian is my preferred language. Does that make sense? We're going to go into this in a lot more detail. I'm going to actually go into language resolution because there's a lot of different scenarios of which language gets chosen based on what's in the app and what the user's chosen and a number of other things. So if I don't answer your question, please come back to me after we talk about language resolution. I think you were first, and then we'll come over here. So the question was, is there a performance cost at load up, at startup, as startup of the app? Not really. So, well, I suppose there is, but not significant, not one that you would notice. The processing of these resources happens in HTML. When I say that process all, that's when it's going to this PRI file that's kind of defines all of the various resources, and that's when it's doing the processing. Yeah, so there is a process as part of the build. So when you build your app, when you click the run or when you actually say build, it actually bundles all that up into what's called a PRI file that's optimized for looking up all of that stuff. I don't know if you guys want to add to that around performance. Okay. I think there was another question in the back. Right. You can, sort of. There is an override, and we'll talk about that when we talk about language resolution. But yes, in general, as an end user, the end user has a set of languages. One language would be the preferred language, right? So in my case, I did all my schooling in English. English is my preferred language. But I grew up in Montreal, and so I speak French quite well and read French, and so I've added that as my second language. And maybe I understand Italian or other languages. And so you would add them in your preferred priority. And then it will sort of search through and find the right language based on what languages are in the app versus what language the end user wants and other things. And there's some heuristics and so on because you won't always have the exact match for the language. And again, we're going to get into that in a lot more detail. So if you have language resolution issues, we'll give you some therapy. Yes? Let me do one more question, then we'll keep going, because this morning I almost ran out of time. So,
okay.
Yep.
So how widespread is this? Asian languages, right to left, bottom up languages, or
So the question was, how widespread is this problem? So all of the languages work this way, and so yes, you would have, you know, right-to-left languages and, you know, Japanese and, right. and Arabic and so on.
My world-class app, any hints or tips on layout, making this salt bridge? I mean, even German, well, my heritage is German, you know, we have 90-letter words and stuff. I can only imagine with right-to-left and Asian languages. How do you design layout effectively?
Yeah, there is no easy way. It does work. Depending on the things like German being long languages, I mean, you just have to make sure that your layout handles that and extends dynamically to handle those longer strings. In general, as a rule of thumb, you can expect that your strings, as you localize, will be up to at least on average about 25% longer than whatever language you start from. And so you have to make sure that you handle that. And you have to test for that.
Yeah. So
yeah, so we're going to talk about some of those things when we talk about translation. There are some things that allow you to test for what's called localizability, whether your app will handle larger strings and so on. I'll actually get into that later on. Let me keep going. I'm going to run out of time. So we did...
So no more questions. Eight questions, then no more questions.
So you're conflicted. Is that what you're telling me? Yes, yes. Please hold your questions. I will gladly, at the end of the session, if you do have questions that are left over, gladly we can take it outside and over a coffee, answer all of your questions. Does that make you feel better? Okay. Let's see. Did we? Okay. So we got into, let's see, where was I? So there's that language settings. We talked about that. And so let's actually look at the language settings HTML. And so here, you'll see. Now remember, the language settings was that page along the right-hand side where it actually showed that image. And so that image is all I have on this page. And so you can see here image, the source, and it just says image. Sorry, images/language.jpg. And so you'll see that if I come back to my images folder, that similar to my strings folder, or sorry, my resource folder, which I had down below, I have different languages. I have the same thing for images. And so in my English US, I have my Do You Speak English image, and in French, it's Parlez-vous français image. And so even though I haven't specified images/en-us language.jpg, Visual Studio, as part of the Make PRI, will do all of that resolution for you. Does that make sense? You guys with me? And the last thing that we need to look at is the app manifest. And so if I come back to my file, here it says pay me please because I ran it in English. That's the app title. And so let me just uninstall it. I need to uninstall it because it actually caches that. And so if I don't uninstall it, it'll just stay English for now. And so you'll look at my app manifest. Rather than giving it the title and actually having it as hard-coded, you know, pay me please, which was the app title in English, I've said ms-resource:app title. And so the app title, again, is another name that gets looked up in my res.json file. And by the way, each one of these fields can be localized. And so things like description, your logo, your splash screen, all of those use the exact same set of rules of all of the things that we've talked about earlier. So your logo file, for instance, would normally be in an images folder in the en-us or es.es, fr.fr, etc. And so if I run this, let me just change the language. Oh, I did that already. Let me just run it. And it's in French. And so, sorry. Settings, there's long, and there's Parlez-vous français. And then also, if I go to my home page, sorry, my start page, you'll see payez-moi s'il vous plaît. So that's all because I put it into the app manifest. Any final questions on that? We're going to jump ahead to globalization. Yes. So the question was, I'm assuming that when you compile, you only get the one language. That's not actually the case. So if I have my resource files are in there, so I have, in my case, I had resource files for, I think I had English, French, and German. All of those resources will be in my app. And so when I submit them to the marketplace, all of those resources will be in my app. And it, as part of the submission to the marketplace, the marketplace will detect that and allow you to localize your app submission to have things like description and all of that stuff so that when the end user in Germany looks at your app, they will see the German description and so on. And when they download, they will download your app and it will work in German for them. That same app, when it's downloaded in Paris, will appear in French to that user. Exact same code base, exact. One AppX does all of that for you.
But I want to clarify my question.
So sure.
If I download it and I'm German, I read it, and then I pass the same application, it's loaded already, I give it to an English person.
Yes.
I want to switch the screen on which I am right now on the flight, switch from German to English.
Oh, so you're saying the app, while it's running, you want
while
to change?
It's running, while it's running.
It's possible. Actually, I don't know. Can you do it on the fly? I think you actually...
The app can do it, but the app has to participate. So it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen automatically. So you'd rerun the process all? Yeah. So you saw when I ran... as part of... Let me come back here to my item.json file. When I run this resource.processall, that's when it's doing... That's when it's going to look at the language... And is doing that replacement of all that datawin.res items with what's in your res.json. If you then change the language and then programmatically you have a button that says, check if I've changed languages, and you rerun this process all, it will then update your resources. Do you want to add to that?
The one caveat on that is the source for image elements does not update automatically, but it doesn't have to do process all. And so you have to do a little extra processing yourself.
Okay. Okay, let's keep going. So the one thing we had lots of questions on, let me switch back to the PowerPoint, was language resolution. And so I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about that. And so basically finding the right language. So as you saw, there is this big change now in Windows around what the end user tells you as part of their language and what they tell Windows. And so in this case, it's English, French, Canadian, Italian, and so on. And that's a big change. So that's one thing that Windows has to keep in mind. The other thing is, that you, as a developer, develop apps that have multiple languages. And so Visual Studio will then, based on what resources you have in your app and what you have in your app manifest around the default and so on, it will generate the list of languages. And you can do this manually, but generally you just let Visual Studio figure it out based on what resource files you have in your language. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing is that you can actually... override all of this, allow the end user to override. And there are certain scenarios where you might want to allow the end user to do that. Basically, what that does is it pushes a particular language to the top of the priority list. So for instance, one good example is the Bing News app allows you to do this. If you go to the settings in Bing News, you can say, change the app language and where the content's coming from. So the scenario might be, hey, I'm living in France, or I'm in France for whatever reason, but I'm an expat American, so I want to see my news from home. And so you might want to load that up in English from the US. And so there is this API, which is the primary language override API, that you can do. I caution you when you use this, you should use it in the right scenario. It is a persistent change. It does require that the app reboot or restart. And so they would have to change the language, you would restart the app, and then it would be persistent. So next time they start the app, even if they don't go back and change it, it's persistent, so it's remembered for them.
It takes effect immediately, but it is persistent. It does take effect.
Really? Oh, okay. So it takes effect immediately. Okay. Thank you. So the one thing is that it is expensive, and it's not for transient changes. So for instance, if you need to switch languages temporarily to do something, perhaps you want to do some logging or something like that, that's not what you would use this for. This is sort of an expensive thing to do, and it's really aimed specifically allowing the end user to change their primary language, not for you to do things like logging. And so you have these three things. How do these three things work together? How does Windows use these three things to pick the right language? And so I have a bunch of scenarios that we'll walk through. So the first one is the app that the end user is looking at supports English, GB from Great Britain, and German. And the user has a language preference of English from Great Britain. So what happens then is there's a list of app languages that are available to Windows to choose. And as you can imagine, there is a match. So English GB is the one that gets used. That's sort of the standard one, as you would expect. The next scenario is now we have German, French, and Italian, but I have French from France. The end user actually has asked for or has a preference for French from Austria. I don't have French from Austria, and so the language that gets chosen is French from Austria because there is a match around the language. And so French from France will get used because it's a fallback from French from Austria. Right? So it knows, it tries heuristically, automagically, behind the scenes, it's trying to figure out what is the right choice. Windows makes this choice for you, and it will figure out what the right set of languages is. The next scenario is I have English US in the app. That's the default. I have French from France, English from UK, and here I have English from Canada, French from Canada as the two preferred choices. And then the app languages are English from Canada, French from Canada. And now it's using English from US because it's falling back from English from Canada. So again, it knows that English from Canada and English from the US is not exactly the same. There's no oots and a boots and all that, but it's pretty close, and so it will actually allow you to use the app. So let's make some changes. So here, the app has a bunch of choices around Spanish and Portuguese. The end user has a preference around English from the US, but guess what? I don't have English in my app. As a developer, I haven't made that available. And so the app language that's available is Spanish from Spain because that's the default language that, as a developer, I have chosen. And so the app will then show the user the app in Spanish, and Spanish from Spain. The next scenario is where you might have a partial translation. Perhaps you haven't finished the translation, or perhaps there are certain languages where you only want to translate some of the strings and the other strings. So for instance, I may have English US versus English UK, where there's some words that may be spelled differently, and so I would only translate English UK the differences, right? And so in this case, I have Spanish from Spain, I have Catalan, which is a partial translation, and then I have French from France. And so the user has listed choices as Catalan and French, so the app languages, both of them that are available is Catalan and French from France. Now, as you're running the app, Windows will figure out that when the app requests a string, there is no string in Catalan, so it will go and find the next available language that is available, French from France, and so it will provide that. So it will be perhaps mostly Catalan, but where it doesn't have that string, it will find the one French from France. Does that make sense? Yes? So now you're talking about translation, or sorry, localization of the actual content of the app, not the actual app itself. Right. So that's a different problem, not really addressed by these areas. Right. So the end user of the app is what we're talking about here. So if the end user happens to be sitting in Paris and they speak French, then the app will appear to them in French. What they're entering in the app, whether it's an address from Germany or whatever, is not really related to the actual localization or globalization of the app itself.
I guess my question is, what Windows keyboard settings?
So the keyboard is a different issue altogether, right? The end user can choose a different keyboard style as well as a different language. Right? So if I'm in France, I'm going to use the AZERTY keyboard. If I'm in US, I'm using a QWERTY keyboard, and so on. It's not really related to the translation. Keyboard is a completely separate issue. And the end user can choose a different keyboard.
It's set in the same control panel, but it is separate, right? So
right.
I could choose to use the US layout in France.
Right. Did you get that? Okay. Okay. So we also talked about override. So how does the override work? So here's another scenario where I have English UK as the default, French from France, German, and the user language preferences are in order of German from Germany and English UK. And so typically the list of languages would be German and then English. But in this case, the end user has chosen via some mechanism that the developer has allowed them to do in their app to override and say English UK is my preferred language override for this app. And so the app languages that are available are English UK and German, but English UK now is the primary language. And so the app itself will show in English UK, and then the dates and times and so on will also be English UK. Any questions on that? I know that every time I do one of these sessions, there's always a lot of questions around language resolution. So I decided I'd put all these different scenarios in. Yes?
I'm sorry, Dominic, but this is my last question.
Okay. Right, so app-supported languages is what is in my app as available languages. So these are all my resource files. App languages is essentially a resolution that Windows goes through where it figures out, oh, here's all the languages that the app has. Here's the languages that the end user has. What are the matches? Right. And so these are the app languages that are available to Windows to use to display the app. Make sense? And so there may be some scenarios where you as an end user, sorry, you as a developer need to see what's going on behind the scenes. So, and so there are APIs to get access to what has the user declared as the languages that they want, what are the app declared languages that you have in your app, and then what are the resolved languages, the languages that we talked about. So let's talk about globalization. We talked about localization and the strings and so on. Now we're going to talk about globalization. And here we're talking about things like formatting of numbers and currency and dates and times, sorting order or collation, and then calendar. For the purposes of this session and because of the amount of time we have, I'm going to focus primarily on numbers and date and time. There are APIs around collation and calendar. I encourage you to go and have a look. And if you have questions, we can address those maybe after the session. So in the area of number formatting, the API is windows.globalization.number formatting, and then there's a number of different formatters depending on what you're trying to do, decimal formatter, currency formatter, and so on. And I'll show you how these work in a couple seconds. Those decimal formatters allow you to both format numbers or currencies. They also allow you to parse numbers and currencies and percents and that sort of thing. And I'll show you how that works in a couple seconds. Same thing on date-time formatting, except it's windows.globalization.date-time formatting, and here I have a date-time formatter that allows me to do that formatting of dates and so on. So let's actually have a look at the code. Starting to lose my voice. So there was actually a second page to the app. Let me just let's actually run it, and I'll just show you what it does. And so it's a pretty simple app that allows me to invoice for my time. I do a lot of very important work, and so I like to invoice for it. My billing rate is $1,000 an hour, and I also have to give a discount because I bill at $1,000 an hour. So here I'm allowing entry of the billing rate as well as entry of the discount, and then I'm showing what that invoice might look like. I don't really invoice, in case anyone was wondering. Okay, so let's see what's going on. And so, for instance, if I do some data entry here, $10 an hour, which is probably more accurate, it changes my app. So, okay, so pretty straightforward stuff. Let's actually see how that all runs. And so that is in a file called split.js. And so let's look at, first let's look at the date. If you didn't notice, there was a date at the top. And so here is where I show today's formatted date. And so I'm using newing up a date formatter, datetime formatter. And so I'm calling it L date format. And I actually left in comments there the different types of dates you can use. In this case, I'm using what are called templates. And so I could have just told it long date or month, day, day of week and year, short date. Essentially, Windows will use that and figure out what to show based on the culture of the end user. And so, for instance, if I use month, day, day of week, and then year, it'll rearrange those in the right order to make it look like the right thing that the end user needs or wants because of their culture, right? In this case, I'm just saying month and day. And in some cultures, if you have month and day, you'll have the day before. Some days, you'll have the day on the end. So in the US, for instance, it would be November 1. In Germany, it might be 1 November, right? And so Windows will figure all that out. And so I've told it the date, the template that I want. I'm figuring out the date that I want to format. In this case, it's today's date. And then I just do an element, get my element, and set it to the date format using the L date, my date formatter, dot format, and then the format that I want. That makes sense? It's really straightforward. And this works pretty much the same way whether I'm doing numbers or dates or currencies, time, all of that stuff kind of works the exact same way. I also, as part of my startup, in this case it's in the app, when the end user navigates to this page, I'm doing this. And so I'm also formatting numbers here. Same thing, I'm newing up the variable decimal format, which is a decimal formatter. And then I'm setting my entry billing date, which is the tag I have. Let me just show you. Let me see if I can find it. And so here's my ID. Entry billing rate was that is a text area in this case. And so I'm just telling it the text content from that, format the billing rate using my decimal formatter, and put that in my billing rate. Does that make sense? Pretty straightforward. Where it's a little different is when we're parsing. And so let me find one of those. And so here I'm actually parsing the billing rate. And so in this case, I'm taking the billing rate field. I'm getting element by ID for entry billing rate, the one we just saw a couple seconds ago, finding out what the value is, and then figuring out what's in that string. And so I'm telling it to parse double, right? So I'm using that same decimal formatter, using the parse double instead of the format. So in this case, I'm pulling in the value as string. And if it's null, that means it couldn't parse it for whatever reason, then I'm just setting it to zero, right? So that I don't have some erroneous thing in there. And then putting that back in, so reformatting it. This is really all there is to it. And by doing it this way, you actually make your app much easier for your end users. It just makes your job a lot easier, depending on what locale or what region your app runs in. Any questions on this? You said you weren't going to ask any more questions. You lied. Sure, go ahead.
So you showed input earlier. So for input to match this, do I have to use Win.js controls? Or, this is all ultimately running from IE10. We have these new HTML5 input types like number and date. Will they play the ball in this work? Or no? I've got to stick with the
JS. Well, this is an API call. So you can call the API wherever that date or time or number is coming from. Doesn't really matter.
But
doesn't have to be a...
Sorry? The HTML5 input type, right, they limit the input in the first place, rather than a generic separate form type stuff.
I'm not sure I understand your question. I'm starting to get short on time, so how about we take it offline?
Yes.
I only have about 10 more minutes, and there's a few other things I wanted to get to. So let's take it offline, and hopefully we can get an answer for you. Any other questions on this area? I wanted to talk about translation. Yes, sure.
Yeah. Is there a way to tell whether the user wants US or metric?
So the question was, is there a way to tell if the user wants metric or US units? And that is part of deciding what language and culture you're in. And so, for instance, when I come to my language area, so here I am in French Canada. right? So I've set French Canada. If I change, you can see here, my region has, in this case, I'm telling it just match whatever is in there. And so one of the things, I got caught by this one earlier this week. I was playing around, and your home location is where the currency comes from. And so you need to actually tell it. In this case, I'm in the US. So even if I tell it I'm in German, I need to tell it I'm in Germany to actually see euros. Is that sort of what you're getting at? The end user tells you via this, and then Windows takes care of that. All right, let's keep going. I lost my... So translation is sort of the last part. So once I've defined all my resources, I need to actually translate those resources. And there's a number, there's sort of a range of ways to do that. What I have been doing today has been sort of do it yourself, right? I'm in the resource file, and I'm actually typing in Visual Studio. And clearly, that works for a small number of languages. In my case, maybe I know three languages. You may know others. But for most cases, you don't want to give your translators access to Visual Studio. So there are different ways to do this. Oh, I should mention that there are some resources that we have available. The Microsoft Language Portal, for instance, includes a list of all of, not all, but most of the Microsoft languages, sorry, Microsoft products that have been translated. And so you can actually go there and say, edit, and then it will show you all the Microsoft products that have used the word edit and what they translated that to. So it's really nice as a glossary, handy if you're using do-it-yourself or if you are an actual translator. What we're going to show today is the Multilingual App Toolkit, which is sort of the next step where I may want to send a resource file out to a translator. Perhaps it's a friend, perhaps it's a professional translator. Have them translate it and then send it back to you, and so you can then put it back in. So we'll spend more time on that. Then beyond that, you may want to perhaps make it available on the web via some crowdsourcing sites. Getlocalization.com, for instance, would allow you to upload your file and then allow your end users to come and actually help you by translating and adding additional languages. And then there's the next step where you might have a professional third-party service, professional localization service, so might have their own, where you would send them the ResW file, or sorry, the ResJSON file, and they would translate it. There's sites like TransFX and others that would allow you to do that sort of thing. But again, today there is this very cool product that we just recently released a few months ago called the Multilingual App Toolkit. And what that does is it integrates directly into the Visual Studio IDE, allows you to manage your translation files, the languages. It also provides a pseudo language engine, which makes it much easier to translate, to figure out if your app is localizable, so as you add languages. And there also then allows you to export files, to send them to translators, send and receive resources to friends and family or translator to review and then send back. And then there's also this XLIF lightweight editor. So rather than use ResJSON, it actually uses this industry standard called XLIF, and then also provides this lightweight editor that you could then provide to someone rather than having them install Visual Studio. So rather than talk about it, I thought it might make more sense to actually show you. And then just like this morning, I'm running out of time. So let me do it quickly. So I have another app. Let me just run it quickly. Oh. So it's going to show me in English. Here's just a crazy app that shows a bunch of pictures of dogs and some text around those dogs. And so there are some localization issues here. So for instance, look at the word woof at the top. We'll see that later. And then if I come to happy dogs, for instance, we see happy dog is a flea-free dog. Looks fine in English. Let's see how it would look otherwise. So let's actually go and look at how we would localize this using the Multilingual App Toolkit. First thing I'll do is I'll actually enable it. And so by enabling it, you'll see that it's actually added, even though I already have an en-us, I've already pulled my resources out. It's now added my multilingual resources, where it's added a pseudo language by default. Now if I rebuild the solution, you'll see if I open that XLIF file now includes all of my ResJSON file, but in English in this case. And so now if I close this and just generate my pseudo translations, you'll see where this is kind of handy. And now if I open this up again, you'll see that the items have now been sort of translated, but using an interesting format. So what it does is it does a couple things. It adds a ID to each one of your strings. You can see it at the beginning in square brackets. And then it takes each one of your strings and pads it with a square bracket on each side, along with some exclamation marks, and then changes each one of the text so that it looks a little different, but still readable in English. So let me actually, I closed my language. So let me just get my language back up here. And I already have a language. So pseudo-localization requires that you add a language. And so the way you would add that is by searching. You can't browse. You actually have to search for the proper language. It's QPS-PLOC. And then you'll see it as a pseudo-language. So I've already added it. So let's push that up to the top so that when I run this app, you'll see that it will run as a pseudo-language. And so what this is doing is it's allowing me to look at my app and look for localizability issues. A couple of things that you'll see here. You'll see that all the strings, you can still read them, sort of, but you can see some issues. You can spot immediately that there's a localizability issue. The title of the app, for instance, is not in pseudocode, in pseudo language, right? And so I know right away, just by looking at it, that I need to go and fix that. Another thing you might see is, if I go here, you can see a happy dog is a flea-free, but that's then been cut off. And so again, that's showing me that there's an issue. If my strings get too long, the gentleman, for instance, that was talking about German, which is much longer than English, I would have an issue. So I need to go and fix that in my layout. And then there's also, you can see these two strings are identical. So I enjoy playing fetch with sticks and balls is identical, but they're in two different places. And so when your tester is telling you there's an issue with this particular string, you don't have to figure out which one he's talking about. He can just tell you it's BF151. And then you can go and just search for that in your localization. Make sense? Really handy for testing of your code. Now, the next step is to actually do some translation. And so I'm going to add a language. And I will just pick French. And I'll just print French Canada for fun. And so you'll see that it's now added FrenchCanada.xlif. If I build and open that, you'll see that I opened it twice. It's actually in English. And so I can look at a particular string and actually go and translate that. I also have available to me the Microsoft Translator. So if I click Translate there, it's actually gone out to the Bing Microsoft, it's actually the Microsoft Translator service out on the web and actually translated that. And I can actually say, go ahead and translate all. And so now it's going, for each one of those strings, it's iterating through and then it's translated. My translation's done. Now, I wouldn't suggest that you publish with this translation. It's good, but not great. So it's a good first pass that you can then give to a real translator to go and refine. Make sense? And the way you would do that is by saying, let me save that, by saying, oh, here it is. I want to send for translation, and I'm going to use a mail recipient. And so it's actually on this, I should have had Outlook open. It's actually going to open Outlook, format a string where I can put it in. It's actually attached that file as well as a message to the translator where they can go and install the multilingual app toolkit that gives them that same XLIF editor, lightweight XLIF editor. And now, of course, if I run this app, where am I? I have to push French up. So it is using XLIF behind the scenes, but it's actually hooking into the build process and using the make PRI to build the PRI with the French in it. And so here you can see that I've now translated into French. Yes?
Mail to, if the translator, your friend or your service, whoever, doesn't have Visual Studio installed, they don't need it. It'll detect that on the box. And
good point. Yeah. Yeah, so all they would get is the Multilingual App Toolkit. They don't need Visual Studio. They just need that lightweight editor. That's all they need. I think I'm out of time, right? Do I have a few? I think I have a couple more minutes. So let me switch back. So Multilingual App Toolkit, I suggest you go and get it. I actually have a link to it at the end of the slide. You saw that the Multilingual App Toolkit was using Microsoft Translator. For some scenarios, you may want to use it yourself. So for custom workflows, there are some APIs where you can do the same thing that the Microsoft Multilingual App Toolkit was using, in other words, translate. There's also APIs to detect what language a string is and so on. There are also APIs available for doing your own crowdsourcing to improve translations. And then as a bonus, if you have content that you need to translate, you can use the Microsoft Translator to translate that on the fly. Does that make sense? And I have a link there. I also have a link to all of these at the end, and here it is. So just for resources here, I did two sessions. So if you missed the one from this morning and you're a XAML person, you can go and have a look at the recording of that later on. There are a bunch of really good samples that I would encourage that you go and have a look at. I've put all of the links for all of the stuff into one bit.ly bundle, bit.ly/benriga-build2012. And so all of the links to all of that stuff, including my contact info, is at that link. And then there's a bunch of sites that you might want to look at. So where to go to download and install Multilingual App Toolkit. I encourage you to go and play with it. Really cool tool. The Microsoft Translator developer site that I mentioned earlier. And then there's also the Microsoft Language Portal, which is the glossary of all the various translations of existing Microsoft products. And I'm actually out of time for questions, but certainly I'm more than happy to have questions. And as you saw, there's a bunch of product team folks as well that are available. If you have additional questions, I encourage you. And then my contact info is there. If you're too shy to ask questions, feel free to email me or tweet to me or whatever. Thanks again for attending.